Welcome to the Howie Silbiger Show on the True Talk Radio Network. Get in on the conversation. Call 1-877-669-1292.
And I'm Howie Silbiger. Welcome to the show. It has been a while, and I'm happy to be back and bringing you the latest in news and commentary right here on the show. So a lot has happened since the last show. A lot has happened. It's been quite a while, and let me explain a little bit why I wasn't on, and so you could understand that it really has nothing to do with you. It's all about me. And I ran for politics. I ran for a political position. And the campaign took up a lot of time, of course, and I was not successful in winning the election. My opponent got more votes than I did, but it was a fun experience. And so that took up a lot of my time. I didn't have a chance to get on, and I've been awfully busy at work. So between one and the other, it has been a long time since I've done a show, and I apologize for that. The shows will be coming more often and more frequently. So mark my word that this is the beginning of a frequent series of shows. I'm not going to take many extended breaks. We're going to do shows regularly. That said, wow, has the world changed since the last time I've been on the show? I don't even know where to start. So I think we should just start in Israel and work our way around the world, because Israel is really under attack and has been under attack for quite a while. It is amazing to me and absolutely mind-boggling to me that rockets and drones could be fired upon the innocent civilian population of the country of Israel, and not a word is said by anybody in condemnation. All the people who were screaming and yelling about the indiscriminate killings of people in Gaza have been awfully quiet, as they have been for the last 25 years. Awfully quiet when rockets fall on the heads of innocent Israeli people. And it just goes to highlight that Jewish blood is not valued the same by the world as other people's blood. You can't even argue that it is, because when we see the Jewish population getting attacked the way it's been attacked, the Israeli population, the innocent Israeli population, and the world extremely quiet, no UN condemnations, no world leaders getting up and screaming, no celebrities outraged by the indiscriminate attack on an innocent civilian population. When you understand that Jewish life is not as valuable as anybody else's life, then we know how we have to defend ourselves. Then we know how the Jewish community has to get out and defend themselves. Let's move over to Amsterdam, where just a week or so ago, there was a pogrom, a 1930-style pogrom, where Jews were attacked and beaten in the streets. Not because they were Israeli, not because they were oppressors, not because they were genocidal maniacs, as many people like to call Israel, solely because they were Jewish. And this seems to be becoming a trend. So October 7th, last year, Jews were attacked in southern Israel because they were Jews. The goal was to kill as many Jews as possible, not as many Israelis, not as many Zionists, as many Jews as possible. And now we see another pogrom happen where more Jews are attacked, and the intention, of course, was to kill them. Unfortunate for the people committing the pogrom, but fortunate for the Jews, there weren't any deaths, but Israel had to evacuate people from Amsterdam. They had to go, and they had to fly planes in there to fly them out. And not a word of condemnation. Oh, we're outraged, and that's it. No offer of help, no offer of condolences, no offer of support, nothing. College campuses across North America and Europe have been rife with anti-Israel, pro-Hamas people yelling, globalized intifada. And if you ever wondered what globalized intifada means, just take a look what happened in Amsterdam. That's exactly what it means. The indiscriminate attack on Jewish people anywhere they live. That is globalizing the intifada. For those of you too young to remember the intifada was the indiscriminate attack on people living in Israel. It didn't matter if they were soldiers, it didn't matter if they were children, it didn't matter if they were babies, it didn't matter what they were, they had to be Jewish. And so the attack on Jews was the criteria for attacking in the intifada. But of course, the attack on Jews doesn't rile anybody up. Nobody cares. Nobody in the world really cares that Jews were attacked in Amsterdam. Nobody in the world really cares that Jews were attacked on October 7th. Many people in the world are saying not enough died, that the job wasn't finished, that maybe, just maybe, another attack should happen imminently. College campuses, university campuses across the world are allowing anti-Jewish people to protest, if that's what you want to call it, to commit mini pogroms on campus, to fight the Jews on campus, to discriminate and to oppress Jewish students. Students are afraid to wear any Jewish paraphernalia, much as the people living in France who are afraid to wear any Jewish paraphernalia when they go into the public. It is completely insane the way the world has reacted and the way the world has allowed other people to react when it comes to October 7th and the aftermath of October 7th. Any country in the world, any country anywhere in the world, would immediately attack and destroy their enemy if they were attacked and 1,300 people were massacred in one day. Any country in the world. Yet Israel's held to a higher standard. Why is Israel held to a higher standard? Why is it that anytime a Jew gets up to defend themselves, anytime a Jew gets up to fight the enemy that has declared that they want to destroy them, that anytime a Jew gets up to show any kind of strength, they're compared to the most vile, genocidal murderers ever to live on earth? Why is that? And why do we accept that? Why are North American Jewish leaders accepting the fact that there are people marching in the street calling for their murder? Where are the Jews in the street? What happened to the strong Jews? Years ago, when the Russian Jews were behind the Iron Curtain and Anatoly Sharansky was the big deal at the time, Jews were in the streets by the tens of thousands, right across North America, right across Europe, demanding that Russia release Sharansky and all the other refuseniks in Russia. It was a common cause that Jews got up and they protested, and they came out in large numbers across North America. They were fighting for the freedom of their brothers and sisters. But now that Israel is at a point of extinction, so either Israel fights back or Israel becomes extinct, Jews around the world are quiet. Hostages, there's over 100 hostages still being held in Gaza. Yet not a sound from anybody, any world leader, not a sound from anybody yelling for the release of hostages. Isn't it odd that some of the hostages are American citizens? And America has done very little to try to release their own people from Gaza. Intelligence reports that say that the majority of the hostages still being held in Gaza, the more than 100 people that are still being held in Gaza, are still alive. So if the majority are still alive, shouldn't the U.S., shouldn't France, shouldn't some of the other countries whose citizens are being held in Gaza care about their citizens and want to release them and try to fight as hard as they can to get them released? Wouldn't that make logical sense? But it doesn't. It doesn't make sense, and they haven't, because by doing so, they would be helping the state of Israel. and by helping the state of Israel, they would be incurring the wrath of the wokies and the anti-Israel crowd that are protesting in the streets in less and less numbers because the money has run out, so they can't pay people to protest anymore. So there's less people showing up to the protests. But the politicians have been swayed, and the celebrities have been swayed, and the media has been swayed to make the victim into the victor. Excuse me, I'm sorry. To make the victim into the oppressor, not the victor. They made the victim into the oppressor. They should have made the victim into the victor. That would have made more sense. That would have been much more logical. But they didn't do that. They made the victim into the oppressor. They wiped out Jewish victimhood to make the Jews the bad guys. In woke society, your net worth is how much of a victim you are. That's how they value society today. Today's society is valued very differently than it was in the past. Today's society values how victimized you are. And so you take a look at the black community. Oh, they're right there on the top. And then you have the lesbians and the transgenders, and it goes on and on and on. And depending how victimized you are, that's how much more accommodation you get from society, how much more leniency, how much more rope they'll throw you in order for you to survive in modern-day society. And the victimhood is calculated by how much oppression you felt, how much the government hated you, how many people hate you, how much protests there are against you. And that builds up the victimhood idea, the idea of victimhood and the victimhood street cred, let's call it that, the points you get for victimhood. And it applies to everybody, with the exception of the Jews. Jews can never be the victim. Jews have always and will always be the oppressor. Jews have always and will always be seen as the people who will destroy minorities because they hate them. I mean, Israel's been called an apartheid state for 30 years, even though the concept of apartheid and Israel, if you do the comparison, if you understand the concept of apartheid, most people don't because they wouldn't be saying that Israel's an apartheid state if they did. But if you actually understand the idea of apartheid, you would see immediately, without even doing much research, that Israel is the farthest thing from an apartheid state that exists. And calling Israel an apartheid state is actually an insult to the victims of apartheid. Because calling the Arabs victims of apartheid is an insult to the poor South Africans who were actual victims of apartheid. Because this is nothing similar. There's nothing similar between the two. Calling Israel genocidal, saying they're committing a genocide in Gaza, it is so untrue and so opposite of what's actually happening in Gaza, that it's actually a laughable claim. But the world leaders, the people who matter, the media, have refused to look at the claims of genocide and have refused to refute the fact that there is no genocide happening in Gaza. They've refused to come out and state that. And we know it's true. We know there is no genocide happening in Gaza. We know that Israeli soldiers are dying because they're going door to door and getting killed in booby traps and getting killed by ambushes because they're trying not to kill civilians. They're trying not to commit a genocide. Trust me, if Israel wanted to commit a genocide in Gaza, the whole Gazan problem, the entire population of Gaza would have been dead in 20 minutes after October 7th. Israel's army is strong enough and their bombs are big enough that they could have leveled Gaza and everything under it in 20 minutes. Everybody would have been dead. But that's not what they did, because there was no intention of committing a genocide. There was no intention of killing innocent civilians. There was the only intention they had was getting rid of Hamas, of taking out the fighters, of taking out the people who are trying to kill Israelis. The Israeli government finally took their job of protecting their citizenship seriously and got condemned for it. No other country in the world would be condemned for that. And so it bothers me when I hear and see people saying, well, you know, Israel should have been out of there in a few months. I mean, they should have gone in, done what they had to do, and then left. Well, yeah, for sure. any other country would have done that. Had Mexico attacked the United States, the United States would have gone in and flattened Mexico City, killing 1 billion people, 1.5 million people, 2 million people. And the world would have said, hey, America, you can't go and kill 1 million people. America would have said, they attacked us, we were defending ourselves. And the world would say, okay, America, but next time try not to kill so many civilians. Had Israel done that in Gaza? Had Israel gone into Gaza and just killed people randomly and just wiped out full cities because that's where the rockets were coming from for the last 25 years? They would have been condemned. The United Nations would have gone nuts. The America, Joe Biden, the president of the United States of America, would have gone crazy. He already went crazy. He banned sales of arms to Israel for the Gaza war. The world would have gone nuts. The media would have condemned Israel up and down, right and left, even though they would have been doing what any country in the world would have done in their situation. How crazy is that? Thank God. And I say it again, thank God, a level-headed, well, somewhat level-headed man got elected president. And maybe we'll start seeing a change in the way America looks at world events. We already had 4 years of Donald Trump. We know what he is. And we could see another 4 years of Donald Trump trying to make America great again, as he promised, but also trying to make the world great again through his foreign affairs, through the way he treats the way he treats foreign affairs. I'm actually beside myself when I think about the poor students on campus, the poor Jewish students on campus, who day in and day out have to face the scourge of anti-Jewish rhetoric, anti-Jewish violence, anti-Jewish feeling, this tension in the air every day they go to school. I know Orthodox Jews who are taking their yarmulkes off. They're taking their kippahs off. They're not wearing anything that displays the fact that they're Jewish, even though looking at a Jew, you could probably tell. But they're trying not to show any signs of Judaism because they don't want to be attacked. Imagine having to go to school and worry every day about being attacked, but being killed. That's globalizing the Intifada. My friends, the enemy has won. They have won. Their idea and their goal was to terrorize the Jewish community. And when we look around North America and we see the billions of dollars that are being spent on shoring up and fixing up security in Jewish buildings, when we take a look at the billions of dollars being spent hiring security guards, when we look at the billions of dollars being spent on surveillance cameras and on different tactical ways to stop terrorists from entering a building in North America or in Europe, when we look at the resources being spent on that, and then we take a look at mosques with no security guards and their doors are unlocked, and we take a look at churches, which are open 24 hours a day, with no fear of being attacked, one has to wonder why the Jewish people are the only people who have to hire security to defend themselves. One has to wonder. The lefties have said from day one that we have no problem with the Jews, we have a problem with the Zionists. Yet synagogues are being shot at and being blown up and being left with firebombs on their doorsteps. Schools, Jewish schools, are being shot at. And they had no problem with Jews, only with Zionists? So why are they attacking Jews? Because that's globalizing the Intifada. Because the Intifada didn't care. In Israel, when the Intifada was happening, they didn't care if you were a Zionist and anti-Zionist. They didn't care if you helped Arabs. They didn't care what you did. All they cared about was that you were a Jew, and they attacked you for being a Jew. On October 7th, the communities that were attacked on October 7th, and this is the irony of the entire situation, the communities that were attacked on October 7th were communities that were leftists. In fact, a couple of days before October 7th, they had a big rally. And they had a big rally in Tel Aviv. Or maybe it was Yerushalayim. I don't remember. It was in one of the two cities. They had a big rally where they were demanding that the Israeli government show more mercy and leniency towards the people of Gaza and allow more goods to go into Gaza and allow more people to come and work in Israel. There were people who were murdered on October 7th who had made it their life mission to pick up people at the Gazan border, sick people at the Gaza border, and bring them to the hospital, to grow fruits and vegetables and donate them to Arab families in Gaza, to take care of the people of Gaza. That's what these communities did. And what was their thank you? Their thank you was 10 years, more than 10 years, probably 12 years, of rockets falling on their heads indiscriminately. And then on October 7th, thousands of murderers and genocidal killers coming through the border and murdering them and burning them alive and killing their babies and cutting their heads off. That was a thank you. That was a thank you to these communities for trying to take care of the Arab population of Gaza. And they did. They tried. They had organizations, heads of organizations that were trying to help the Gazans were murdered on October 7th. There's no logic to it. There's no reason to it. October 7th happened. And when we take a look at the reasons behind October 7th, taken by the own terrorists, it was to kill as many Jews as possible. October 7th, that kind of attack that happened on October 7th, was not going to liberate land. It wasn't going to drive the Zionists into the sea. It wasn't going to drive the Zionists out of Israel. It wasn't going to destroy the state of Israel. That was pure terror. It was a terror attack orchestrated to scare the Jewish people around the world, not only in Israel, around the world. Because don't forget, Hamas's charter calls for the murder of Jews around the world. It doesn't just call for the murder of Jews in Israel. So the idea was to scare. It was a scare tactic to scare the people around the world that we're coming for you and to murder as many Jews as possible. When Hamas leaders got on television on October 8th and said, look, October 7th was very successful, but Israel and the Jewish people are going to experience October 7th over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. He was calling to globalize the Intifada. It is beyond my understanding, completely beyond my understanding, why North American leaders, political leaders in North America, right across North America and Europe, haven't banned the term globalized intifada at rallies. Why they allow people to scream globalized intifada at rallies. Beyond my comprehension. It's beyond my comprehension why these kind of rallies are allowed to happen to start with. Foistering hate and promising to destroy a community, to destroy a people who are living there. But the fact is that politicians, under the guise of freedom of speech, have allowed this to continue for way too long. And it is very unfortunate that the Jews of the diaspora have been feeling the results of their politicians and their leaders. I'll use leaders as in a very loose term, both Jewish leaders and political leaders. They've been feeling the results of these decisions to allow these things to happen. And so here we are. We keep continuing to go backwards and regressing back to the point where we're almost back at 1939. And the concept of a Holocaust happening somewhere in North America or Europe is not so far-fetched. And if that's the case, then it's time for the Jews to realize that. And building fortresses and putting security guards in front of your buildings and putting more cameras up isn't going to stop the radical mobs that are going to come out and kill you when the time is ripe. I know, I sound like an alarmist, and I hate that. I don't like being an alarmist. I don't like being the guy who's saying this stuff. But in 1936 and 1937, 1933 and 1934, the Jewish community ignored Vladimir Jabotinsky as he traveled across Europe, screaming that the Nazis are going to kill the Jews, it's time to get out of Europe. And they ignored him. They called him a radical. They still call him a radical till today. They call him a radical. But he was right. And sometimes the people who are called radicals, the people who think and watch and understand what's happening outside of the box, are the people we should be listening to. It amazes me when you mention Vladimir Jabotinsky's name in certain circles, and they look at you as if you've said Adolf Hitler. But all Jabotinsky tried to do, his whole concept was to save Jews. He was running around trying to convince Jews that the Nazis wanted to murder them. And how did he know that the Nazis wanted to murder Jews? Well, quite simply, the Nazis said so. And this is the fault of the Jewish community. I'm not saying the Holocaust was the fault of the Jewish community, but I'm saying this is a fault that the Jewish community has, is that when our enemies tell us what they want to do, and they're very clear at telling us what they want to do, and throughout history, our enemies have been very clear at telling us what they want to do, we tend to ignore them. We tend to say they're exaggerating. They don't mean what they said. We overanalyze what they say. And then we find out, oh no, they actually meant it. What they said is actually what they meant. So when our enemies are calling to globalize the Intifada and calling to kill Jews randomly, attack Jews in the streets, we could say, oh, that's not what they meant. That's not what they're calling for. It's all rhetoric. We don't have to listen to rhetoric. We don't have to respond to that. We don't have to lower ourselves. We could be bigger than them. We don't have to bring ourselves down to our enemy's level. And we could pontificate all we want. But at the end of the day, Amsterdam was the first of many programs that are going to happen. It was the beginning. It was the testing field. It was the litmus test. It was like Kristallnacht, and it happened actually on the weekend of Kristallnacht. It happened the week of Kristallnacht, of the anniversary of Kristallnacht, which is far more ironic. And I don't know if it was planned that way, but it didn't go unnoticed that the pogrom in Amsterdam happened on the anniversary of Kristallnacht. So that was the litmus test. How would the world react if we attacked the Jews in the street? How will Israel react if we attack the Jews in the street? How will the Jewish community around the world react if we attack the Jews in the streets? And the results were unbelievably, mind-blowingly clear. There would be no reaction. There were no Jewish riots, no Jewish mass protests. Jewish leaders were very weak in Europe and North America in coming out and publicly condemning the attacks in Amsterdam. It wasn't a news cycle very long. It was a news cycle for a couple of days, then the media forgot about it. Israel sent a couple of planes in. Didn't even make the front page of any newspaper. The killing of Jews, the attack on the Jewish population, the globalizing of the Intifada was not newsworthy to most news agencies. And even the Jewish news agencies covered it for a couple of days and moved on. We don't want copycats, they said. If we harp on it, then there'll be copycats. That mentality comes from an old shtetl mentality. In Yiddish, they called it the Zei Still mentality, which meant that, you know, if you don't rock the boat, if you don't complain to the oppressors, if you don't try to fight back, they'll leave you alone. They'll move on to someone else. It's the old bully territory, the old bully analogy, where if a bully punches you in the schoolyard and you ignore him and you don't punch him back, eventually he'll get bored and move on to someone else. It's not true. That's not what happens. It doesn't happen in the schoolyard. It doesn't happen in geopolitics. The bully in the schoolyard will continue bullying you if you don't fight back because you're an easy target. So why wouldn't he? in geopolitics, if you're a country that doesn't fight back, if you're a people that doesn't fight back, then the world's really not going to care about you. Think about this for a second. When something happens to the black community, I'll use them as an example, because they're very vocal. When something happens to the black community, what do? The first thing they do is they rally the troops and they get on the street and they protest. That's the first thing they do. When the protests don't lead them anywhere, they start to riot. That's step number two. Step number three, their preachers get up and say, this is unacceptable. Hundreds of thousands of people get onto the street. And they fight. And they burn things down. And they cause a lot of noise to bring their attention to the media. And what is the result of these things? Well, after Black Lives Matter and the summer of rioting of Black Lives Matter, there are very few people in the United States of America, or anywhere in the world, actually, that want to take on the black community. So suddenly, hatred against the black community has dropped. I mean, it's shifted to the Jewish community. But the Jews won't get into the streets. The Jews won't fight back. And so the more weak we look and the more scared we look, because we are scared and we're looking it as a community, spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on security, having 3, 4, 5 security guards standing in front of a synagogue on any given Saturday, locking our doors and closing our windows and hiding behind our blinds, and not taking to the streets, but having our rallies in buildings. It all shows weakness. And the weakness that we're showing shows our enemies that they could do whatever they want to us, that we're not going to fight back, that there's no danger in attacking the Jewish community. And then when you had people who were fighting back, you had Jewish defense leagues. They were called radicals, and they were ostracized by the community. The people who were running these things were considered radical idiots, and the community leaders would turn them into the police and report them and set them up with the FBI in sting operations because they wanted to get them off the streets. And who's left? The leadership of the federations of the United Jewish Appeals? The rich people who gave a lot of money and became president and suddenly became important because they had large pocketbooks? These people are left to defend the Jewish community? They're too busy trying to defend their pocketbooks to worry about the Jewish community. So they wring their hands and they demand that the entire community follow their lead. We are the federations. We are the United Jewish Appeals. We are the leaders of the Jewish community. Follow our lead. We have security centers, and you will be safe. Tell that to the people of Amsterdam. Tell that to the people of New York who were beaten in the street. Tell that to the people of Montreal. Tell that to the people of Toronto that they're safe. Tell to the people of Chicago. Big cities that have big Jewish populations that are constantly under attack, continuously and constantly under attack. The federations not being able to protect them, and the police not caring enough to protect them. We live in a crazy world. And a crazy world that has decided that the Jewish people are expendable. Now, we know that the Jewish people will survive this scourge of anti-Jewishness that has enveloped the world. We know that. And we know we'll come out stronger at the end of it. But only if we learn the lessons of history. Only if we realize that the only way to survive, if you want to live in the diaspora, and you know, it's an option now, you don't have to live in the diaspora. You can move to Israel, a strong country that will defend you. But if you choose to live in the diaspora where we've, as Jews, have outlived our welcome, But that's fine. You could continue to live there. You could continue to spend thousands of dollars on hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars on security. You could continue to shake in your boots every time some leader gets up and screams that there is a screams for a pogrom against the Jewish people. You could continue to put your trust in people who are chosen for leadership positions because of their wealth. And then you could realize that at the end of the day, you're responsible for yourself. And by not teaching children self-defense, by not learning self-defense yourself, you are putting yourself and your children at danger. You are putting yourself and your children in grave danger. I'm trying not to be alarmist. But much like Zev Jabotinsky, I feel I have a responsibility to tell you the truth. Much like Zev Jabotinsky, I believe that life for Jews in North America, life for Jews in Europe has come to an end. And it's time to go home. And you could call me a hypocrite if you want. I know I live in North America. You could call me a hypocrite if you want. But somebody has to be in North America encouraging and fighting and pushing Jews to get out. And it's time. It's time for Jews to leave North America and move to Israel. It's time. The more we see these riots in the streets, the more we see the haters coming out, the more we see the lack of care that governments have towards the fate of the Jewish people, the more we know that it's time. It is time now for the Jews to leave. But the Jews have to make a decision. You have to make a decision yourself. I speak to a lot of Jews and they tell me, I'm afraid to go to Israel. I don't even want to go visit there. Look what's happening there. Forget about what's happening there. Look what's happening here. At least in Israel, you have a Jewish army defending Jewish people. At least in Israel, when the drones come from Iran and want to ram into houses, most of them are getting shot down. Most of the rockets falling into Israel are getting shot down. And that's going to stop very soon. Israel's going to put an end to that very soon. But the hatred in North America has existed for centuries. And the hate in Europe has existed even longer than that. And if we continue to allow ourselves to be subjected to this kind of hatred, and if there's nobody to fight back, it's only going to escalate. And it's not going to escalate good, it's going to escalate bad. And we're going to find ourselves in a situation where the majority of Jews still living in North America aren't going to be able to escape. And when it hits the fan, and it will, what are you going to do then? How are you going to protect yourself? How are you going to protect your families? Now, some people have told me, I've made this argument, some people have told me, hey, look, people survived the Holocaust. And I said, you're right. But much less people survived the Holocaust than got killed in the Holocaust. Your odds of surviving another Holocaust are very slim. They only get better percentage-wise if you move to Israel and you have a strong army protecting you. And you can't rely on Israel to send planes to save everybody around the world. There's not enough planes, there's not enough time. Thank God the majority of Jews in the world live in Israel today. But let's hope that more decide to get there. Let's hope that more decide to see the light and see what's going on and decide to go. I would much prefer empty Jewish populations in North America and in Europe. Empty cities, former cities, that we could say Jews used to live here. Graveyards of people and nobody to visit them. I'd much prefer that than filling up more graveyards with people. It seems so clear to me. And yet there will be people who will listen to the show who will tell me that I'm a radical, who will send me emails saying, Howie, why are you trying to scare people? What's wrong with you? There'll be pulpit rabbis. and Jewish community leaders who became leaders because they had big pocketbooks, who would say to me, Howie, you can't talk that way on your podcast. They used to tell me this when it was on AM radio too. You can't talk this way. You can't tell people this. You're going to scare the population, and that's not right. You're going to cause a panic in the Jewish population. Well, maybe it is time for the Jewish population to start panicking. Maybe it is time that a panic sets in and Jews realize that the situation is not going to get better. It's going to get worse and worse and worse. Maybe it's time for Jews to start panicking and realizing there's only one option. Maybe it's time. And maybe it's time for the Jewish community leadership to stop pandering and stop basking in the fact that there are Jew haters out there and they can raise more money because they're defending the Jewish community against Jew haters. So we can raise money. And stop worrying about raising money and start worrying about the actual safety of the Jewish community. Maybe it's time for these organizations that claim to be defending Jewish people to stop collecting money and start actually defend Jewish people. And maybe it's time to bring back organizations and tough Jews like the Jewish Defense League who will stand outside and fight, physically fight Jew haters and defend the community physically as much as possible. Maybe that's time for that. And maybe it's not such a radical idea to have people who could defend other Jews. If the Jewish community refuses to teach Jews how to defend themselves, maybe Jews who want to defend themselves and want to defend their community should be allowed to be out there to do it and shouldn't be attacked by the mainstream Jewish community. Maybe it's time for that. I sure think it is. I don't know about you. I'm Howie Silberger. Thank you so much for joining me. I do appreciate it. I will see you again next show. Have a great one.